Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He might still be. Pushes off Hartlett here. Look at the speed. Look at the control. Now for something special. AMT.
They have done what every other team hasn't been able to do this year. Beat the Giants in a close one.
Welcome to Clicking Balls. This is the AFL Round 12 Wrapped. My name is Heath. And the first question I ask every week is for your highlight of the week. So, Josh, you got a highlight of the week?
Oh, for mine, it was probably Jeremy Howe's mark in today's Queen's Birthday match.
Not a bad effort.
Absolute screamer. It looked like the stereotypical Gary Ablett senior mark, where he gets up, knee over the shoulder, and just sits there, except he got up, knee over the shoulder, and kept going up.
And kept going, and took a chest mark.
Yeah, beautiful mark. Mark of the round, easily. And the funny part is, he did another one in the very next passage of play, where it came back at him. And not quite as good. If he had it in reverse, he would have had two possible marks of the week in a row. But as it was, the second one was a spectacular mark that wasn't quite as good.
And it's like that sort of mark where you had that much air, you actually have time to consider your dismount.
Well, that's it. He hit the ground running and played on.
Yeah. Just have a look around, see what's going on. But yeah, one of the few highlights for Collingwood on a day which saw them really try their best to lose that match.
Well, they were dominant in the first half. And then they were brilliant with their pressure. But we'll get to the full game later on. But yeah, that was my highlight. The absolute belter of a mark.
Brenton, you got a highlight of the week past?
Yeah.
And a beer of the week?
I do. I've got both. Well, highlight of the week's been a familiar one for our podcast. But F1, Canada Grand Prix, which is always a Grand Prix I look forward to because it's one of the old school tracks where you don't have so much runoff area. The runoff area is a wall. And so that kind of sorts out the boys from the men. And to get the maximum out of a lap, you've got to really just touch the walls. And that's the fast way around the track. But anyway, Dan Ricciardo managed to snag a third place due to a bit of Bradby in there.
Motherfucker, I haven't seen it yet.
A couple of people sort of fell out the way. And Canada, obviously, being near America, they got lots of stars there. Also, Bill Burr, who's started to teach himself Formula 1. He does a little wrap-up of his Formula 1 episodes.
You've been listening to his podcast as well. Yeah,
he knows
great.
He knows nothing about it and like completely open to that fact, but his reviews of it are hilarious.
Well, that's what I like about it is that he says, I know nothing, but I'm trying to learn. Yep. I'm liking it.
Yeah. You
know?
That's Liberty Media doing smart shit right there.
And like, all these points are on point, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
But anyway, so they've got Sir Patrick Stewart. Patrick Stewart? Yeah.
Professor X?
Yeah. On the podium, doing the podium interviews. And that has been tradition for Ricciardo on podiums. He rips off the shoe, tries to give one to, I think it was Lewis or Valtteri, whoever was else on the podium. They don't budge, and someone grabs his shoe and throws it away. Patrick Stewart comes up, goes, oh, you know the shoe there, mate. How about make you share that shit around?
Patrick Stewart is an absolute fucking legend.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen his, what's a fucking show called?
Extras.
No, he's got a TV show at the moment where he's a newsreader.
I don't know.
Hard Talk or something like that. I can't remember.
Right.
But he is a fucking funny bastard. He's a former champion, a former military person, like a captain from the Falklands War.
Oh, right.
Now, if you know the Falklands War, that's when Argentina took over the Falkland Islands, which is off the coast of Argentina.
Yeah.
And the UK owned it. And they said, well, you're not going to come all the way over here and get it. I'm like, yes, we fucking are. So they turned up and they're like, well, we're protecting it with our 6-inch cannons that have a 1.2 mile range. He's like, well, we've got 1.4 on our boats.
Yep.
So you're kind of fucked. And they bombed the living shit out of it. But yeah, the funny part is that's kind of his war. And he is hilarious. He's a drunk, he's a cokehead, and he womanizes. It's fucking funny as hell.
And generally, Patrick Stewart's up for making a fool of himself anyway. But it was funny that Ricciardo didn't dare offer him, obviously a knighted person didn't offer him a boot full of his sweat and champagne. But he was that keen that literally asked Dan Ricciardo to fill up his boot so he could have a chug out of it. Took it down like a champ too. Mm-hmm. And speaking of the Falklands War, I only remember how dirty they're still about it when Top Gear went down there.
Oh, shit, yes. Oh,
yeah. And speaking of Top Gear, did you see
Richard Hammond?
Hammond, crashed. Look at Koenigsegg.
I think it was a full electric. So I think it was the new Chinese full electric car that had the Nürburgring record for a fraction.
Oh, really? Oh, right.
It looked, I could be wrong. It looked like it to me.
Yeah, it looked like a smart car. I thought it was a Koenigsegg, but crashed into a field, almost killed himself again.
It rolled and set on fire.
Yeah.
New show, same script.
Yeah, well, I'm starting to think that maybe he's just not a very good driver. maybe they could be using a new host, and if they're listening, I'm ready.
My highlight of the week was we just did a little bit of fishing yesterday. We went to a trout farm, so it's not proper fishing.
Like,
it's as close as you get
fishing
to
a barrel,
fishing
literally.
In a barrel. But there was a part there we were sitting in, or I was sitting on one of the little fishing, I don't know, it's not a lake, but whatever it is. Yep. And all the kids and everyone had buggered off to another one because that was hotter. They were getting more bites over there. And I turned around and realized I was by myself and I thought, this will do. I just sat there, not a nibble, not even anything close. But I'm sitting there watching the UFC fights on my phone and keeping up with that. No, it was good. It was all I wanted.
That's what fishing's about, isn't it? Just trying to get away from everyone else and enjoy your little time of solidarity.
Yeah,
solitary.
I remember seeing a show where they actually showed that if you're talking in the boat, you know, making whatever noise, the fish don't give a shit.
Nah, of course not.
Yeah.
It's just the fishermen that give a shit.
Yeah.
I mean, for peace and quiet, you
I
dickhead.
Can understand that. Yeah. Now, the kids caught a couple each, so that's all. You know, nothing could be worse than if one caught some and the other one didn't.
Yeah.
But anyway, we got away with it. And fucking $260 worth of fish in the end of the day. But
yes, this is not a bad little racket they got running out there.
Nah, it was good. Yeah, they did a good job.
What do you mean $260 worth of fish?
I mean, when we walked out, we had to pay $260 for the fish.
Fish you catch, you got to pay for it. That's the thing.
Fucking hell.
It's not like paying entry fee and then...
No, you pay that as well.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't suppose it's like the strawberry farm where you can sneak a couple of few down your mouth before they notice.
I think you're allowed to, and they figure if anyone's dumb enough to do it, you're welcome to it.
So you're catching salmon and they're filleting carp for you.
My daughter caught a massive 2.2 kilo salmon.
Damn.
Out of it there. And nice. That was a $55 fish.
Jesus. They're just feeding them lead sinkers, aren't they? So they can
just about,
wrap it up.
I reckon. And that's why they gut them themselves, so they can take it all out.
Yeah.
I'm onto them.
It's about $20 a kilo. That's about what it is at the shop.
25.
What colour was the salmon, out of curiosity?
Not as rosy red
right.
as the ones you see.
Yeah.
Because it's a farm.
But it's still
not
a little
white.
Pink.
It's not yeah, white. Yeah, yeah, it's still pink.
Right. I always wondered what the sort of not free...
Yeah, well, it's not wild, it's farm.
Yeah.
But no, it was good. Anyway, but we'll go to the footy. We had 6 games over 5 days. So we'll start way back on Thursday night at a very soggy SCG where the Swans put one together and got over against the Bulldogs.
Oh, put it together very well too. They were dominant all night.
They were. They handled the conditions and handled the Bulldogs much, much better.
And expected more of a yelp from the Bulldogs in this one. I thought that maybe with a bit more of a younger running team, they might have been able to put up, you know, a bit of a fight. But it was Sydney sort of wayward kicking that kept them in the match for the short time they were.
Well, it is wayward, 12-16, but it was that was the night as well, though.
I mean,
it was sloppy and they just adapted. I saw a lot of the Bulldogs were trying to just keep it moving forward, which is good. But they kept fucking it up. They kept slipping and second grabbing, which, you know, when it's all in tight and close, you haven't got a chance to go for a second grab.
It's about the third, fourth week in a row the Bulldogs have played sort of that real messy football, just end-to-end, turning it over. But usually they'll come through because the team's been of lesser quality. Well, whereas the Swans are starting to pull it together now.
Swans are a bloody good side. Now, they've been underperforming the first half of the season, but now we're finally starting to see what they can do.
Well, I mean, they lost to Hawthorn 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's how underperforming they've been.
Yeah. I feel like they finally realised that Cole isn't coming back, so they can try and play it up.
We're going to try again.
Yep.
And it was their midfield, though, that really dominated. I mean, Josh Kennedy had a massive one, and they couldn't stop him.
Well, you can make the argument it's the best midfield in the comp.
On paper, it is.
Yeah.
And this sort of weather, that's what's generally going to win games, is that strong midfield, be able to push the ball forward.
Being able to run the ball out.
Make smart decisions, too. A bit of experience always pays off.
And I thought the Bulldogs... they bring back in Cloak. Very interesting that he gets a run again in a day that's not really going to suit him.
Yeah.
But, you know, having said that, Buddy at the other end had 8 scoring shots or something like that. So it's just his usual dominant self.
There was also plenty more of opportunity in the Swans forward lines. I think they've almost doubled their inside 50s just about.
I mean, geez, if you're like Buddy Franklin, absolute freak of a talent, but if you could line up 4 midfields to kick to you, I reckon 3 of them are playing for Sydney at the moment.
Yeah, and you just can't really afford to put two defenders, key defenders, on Buddy Franklin. Yeah, so you've got to sort of let him get his own and just hope that you can lock him down, push him outside the 50-metre line.
Well, they tried a few different players on him, but the problem is the players that are strong enough aren't tall enough
yeah.
or mobile enough.
So that puts the Swans at 4-7. Talks of a comeback.
They're not out of this.
So they're going to have to really, they played good at Etihad against some lesser teams. This one was at the SCG against the Bulldogs.
They need eight more wins.
Yeah, we have to see. There's still quite a bit of talent above them for them to step into that top eight.
It's doable, but it's hard. And if they're going to make finals, it's these teams are the ones they've got to beat.
Yeah.
Like the Bulldogs.
Yeah, and their percentage is good enough that when they're stuck in level pegging turns with the teams ahead of them, they're going to be competitive. Yeah. You know, it's not going to be having to get wins.
Well, I think they're going to be getting better as opposed to some other teams which are starting to fall away.
Yeah.
It'll be injury list.
Port Adelaide.
Injury list will be the thing that decides it. But you look at the ladder and you've got two games separating third from bloody 10th. Like, that's massive.
Yeah.
It's tight.
And like as we saw, the way the winning game plan at the moment
4-10,
is conducive to a lot of those teams that are from 6-10 as well. Running through the middle, forward pressure, that's sort of been the strategy that people are trying to unlock at the moment.
It does look like the Bulldogs' defence as in premiership defence, looking a little bit shaky, but it's they've always got that in the back of the mind that, we only finished seventh last year. It doesn't matter.
This is true. And, I mean, we're around the rabbit traps. They've got a bit of a party culture going on there.
Doesn't take long.
Yeah. And so, I've heard a few little whispers that the...
Libba's leading the way.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of brothers dealing out some shit from there, apparently. Yeah,
there you are. Yeah. All right, we'll go on to Friday night. The Crows put it over the Saints. Again, I don't think it was any surprise that it was nearly a 10-goal win.
I'm surprised it was only 10 goals, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't tag out Sloan. I mean, it seems like if you want to beat Adelaide, that's sort of step one.
Well, I was about to say they did an awesome job tagging out Sloan. He only had 14 touches.
I thought he actually had a fair bit of influence. Like, only 14 touches, yeah. But he seemed to get a lot of smart touches.
I thought this was actually good for Adelaide because they showed that without the massive input from Sloan, they've still got too much talent around.
Yeah.
But when you've got, there are other midfielders like the Crouch brothers and Rory Laird, who running off half back into the midfield.
Yep.
They just went, all right, well, we know now. We've seen this before. Yeah. We know what to do.
Plus, like the Crouch brothers, getting that bit of mongrel about them and just getting on the skin of the opposition teams, just that real annoying, give it a little cheap shot, one of the ribs, play for a couple of free kicks here and there, but just annoying as shit to play against. And they're really holding down their own in that respect.
The right size for it too, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. They're almost like an injury-free version of the Kurnell brothers for Carlton.
Sammy Jacobs, though, he had a night out. Like 37 hit-outs, and then to back it up, scores 3 tackles, 5 marks, and then 25 possessions, if you don't mind.
Yeah, pretty lazy little effort there at that level for the big fellas.
Fucking dominant.
Done all right.
But... other thing I saw too, young Tex only got 3-2, but he was involved in a shit ton of score.
3-2 is a good turnout. It's one of those things that people say, I've said it too, that he doesn't kick enough goals. He's still averaging, 2.5 a game.
Yeah.
It's not a bad effort.
Yeah, and I mean, he only needs a crash packs, and any best can pick up the slack there. So exactly. It's not like he's just supposed to be there just to kick goals. He's there to get the ball to the ground or take big marks and kick from outside 50. Mm. He can leave any best to know where that ball's going to land.
Yeah. Well,
the way those two combine is utterly perfect. Like textbook. Yeah. As in, you'll have Tex going up. If he can't get a clean mark, he'll tap it towards Betts.
Yeah.
And even though it's towards Betts, towards the boundary line, which probably isn't what a coach will tell his under 13 team, it's Betts.
Yeah,
the boundary line's his home. Doesn't matter. Either side, either leg, bang.
It's not flukes if you do it every time.
Shit, no. I think if you go to Adelaide Oval to see Adelaide play and he doesn't do that, you get your money back, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And out of 7 goals, Josh Bruce, in his first game back, kicked 4 of them. For limited opportunity, taking 7 marks, it's not a bad way to say, I belong here.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Saints' problem is still trying to figure out that back line. I don't think Goddard's come back yet, has he?
Yeah.
Has he?
Goddard,
no, he didn't play, I don't think.
Oh, yeah.
You might have played VFL, I'm not sure.
Yeah. So they're still waiting on sort of the hopes and dreams of him being a key defender. And they just can't match up against sort of a two-pronged opposition forward line.
Yeah.
There's too many people to cover. I think St Kilda's forward line, they've got plenty of options, and they'll definitely be able to sort that out. Still you don't know how Paddy McCartan's going to fit in there with Bruce coming back and playing pretty well.
Accuracy hurt him too, though, with Akers, Sinclair, Stephen and Weller. 0-8 between them all.
Yeah.
So, you know, you convert a few of those and you're in the match. But, you know, that also says how much pressure Adelaide had on the ball carriers.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those weren't set shots.
Yeah. I did find it funny. I saw on Reddit where someone had reposted something from the Adelaide Crows fan base team about a supporter being overly loud and cheering every single play and impacting the people around there's experience of the game. Like, holy shit, man, go to a Collingwood, Richmond, Carlton, Melbourne, go to any game at MCG, that's life. That happens everywhere.
I tell you what, they're really earning that reputation, aren't they?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I think they were saying it's the shrill voice. And I can relate to that. I remember one woman at the footy screaming, "Go you Maggies," while she was sipping from a Jack Daniels flask. And yeah, it does affect you.
Yeah, but I mean, that's everywhere. And unless you've got a punch in the face, they're going to still be doing it next week and the week after.
Well, in fairness, old Carmen, after half time, she quietened down or passed out, whichever.
She'd also switched teams halfway through. Well, that's
true. I think half the time her team wasn't even playing. So maybe that's the thing. Like this chick, maybe just give her a bit of a couple of Woodstock bourbons. And she might have a little bit of that.
And I mean, I still prefer them over the Nannas that were out at the old Adelaide Oval, Amy Stadium, where it was.
Footy Park.
Yeah, that's one.
But the Crows, I mean, it was a good little bounce back because they had the loss against Geelong in their last outing. But really, 10 goals against Saints at home, it's what you kind of expect from them. So they just did the job. And the Saints will be better next game when Big Nick comes back.
Yeah. With GWS's loss, do you put Crows as flag favourites now?
To me, they're neck and neck anyway, both of them. I don't care what happens for the rest of the year, really. That's where it's going to end.
I think the way the season's been going, whoever is flag favourites that week loses the next week. So I think they'd be keen to avoid that.
Yeah. I think it's just a game of matchups for this top four
bit. Rock, paper, scissors,
I feel like if it was GWS Adelaide head-to-head, I feel like Adelaide have the advantage. But if Geelong's sneaking in there and it's Adelaide Geelong, I think Geelong have the advantage, even though they're lower on the ladder than both those teams.
And GWS probably smashed
Geelong. Yeah, I mean, they got the Tigers.
I love how we all laugh there. Poor Tigers.
We're batting well above average.
In the top four?
Feels good.
Love and life.
Yeah, we've got some people falling around us, which is always handy.
That'll happen. All right, on to the next one, and this is another game that I got to attend. The Hawks and the Suns at the MCG, and the Suns got out to a handy lead and did enough to go to sleep in the fourth and still get by.
Yeah,
so the Hawks were coming right back at them, though, in the fourth quarter, which is, I think, best for Gold Coast to show that they were able to withstand that charge.
Sure, the funny thing is, it's one of the best quarters I've seen Hawthorn play in a while.
And it was all really off the back of Jack Gunston.
Kicking goals
from everywhere I was glad that I got to see the game because he hasn't had a good game for a while. You'd sort of say, okay, what's going on? And I watched it, and the delivery to him, even when it looks good, it's not good. Because, you know when you lead on like a 45-degree angle and they kick it out to your lead and then you have to like curve and straighten up?
Yeah.
That means it's a bad kick.
Yeah.
Because you only need a meter space on your backman. But if you have to change the angle of your lead...
Yep. You can cut the angle.
There's no more meter.
Yeah.
It's gone. So I watched that, and some of the kicking into the forward line was just abysmal.
Yeah. And especially like a good kicking into the forward line is also leading the lead where it's best for them to go, because they got their back to the goals. You can see what's around them and you can sort of direct them with your kick about where they're supposed to go. But so many times you put it out too far in front, you stretch them out too far, and that you've owned a good lead, but you put them out too far that they've got to look to pass it off for someone who can kick over 50 or to centre it up.
Yeah, Gunston had such a good game. I'm worried North's going to offer him $1 million a season.
doesn't play midfield. You got no chance.
He might have to.
But
$1 million a season, he will.
Ablett's still Ablett, isn't he?
Yeah, freak.
That's the first time in a while I've seen him do that shimmy that he was so famous for.
Oh, there was one. Yeah. It was either the last or the second last goal where Howe had him. And it was just one-on-one.
Yeah.
And he had a good little 5 metres. And I don't know if Ablett even knew Howe was there.
Yeah.
You couldn't call it a fend-off. It was less than that. And he just got by and kept going.
Yeah.
It's just that ripple. Like, he ripples through his body like a dog shaking off water, and then the player just drops.
Yeah. He's very good at, like, just sort of working his way through that crowd. The arms and legs that get whacked his way.
Kung Fu master.
Like we're saying about sort of directing people with your kick when they're leading about where they're supposed to go. He does the same with his handballs, open up the play coming out of those packs. That's what I found with this game is Hawthorn gave up the corridor too often in important parts of the game.
Yeah.
Their sort of backstop game was very poor, especially the last goal, I think it was, where it was pretty much an end-to-end effort from Gold Coast.
Yeah, 2 metre
straight
Peter
down the middle. Yeah, yeah.
Putting the sealer on again.
Yeah.
He's having a good run. Like, yeah. Good in the clutch.
Yeah, and it's just a matter of being in a position where you've got a bit of motivation and you know, you can beat games and win away from home. It's got to be good for Gold Coast, but it's going to be hard for the whole of Ablett, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, the rumour going around is that he's saying, I'm trading or I'm retired. Gold Coast have nothing to lose by saying, "Well, right, you're fucking retired.
You're fucking
then.
Retire then, yeah.
Eat it."
Well, can they trade in?
Yeah,
because I
yeah,
feel like absolutely. Gold Coast aren't near a premiership anytime in the next 5, maybe 10 years, and so I think it might be better to get, you know, 2 or 3 good players for an Ablett, because
they probably get one because he's probably only got 2 seasons left in him.
Well, look, if Geelong offered their first round draft pick, which is going to be about 15, I think if you're Gold Coast, you go.
I think you can get some change out of that.
I think you get a player in there as well.
Or 15 and a late pick swap or something. Yeah. I don't know.
If they offered, say, Cam Guthrie, you'd probably take it straight up.
Well, yeah, yes, you would.
Giabla gets his number back too. Yeah. So
maybe that's what he's putting in there. But, I don't think Gold Coast have anything to harm themselves by playing hardball.
Yeah, and I think that, it'd be in their best interest. Like, they're not really a big membership club, are they?
I think
Abbott's really pulling in sponsors or members or anything like that. So I think their best strategy is obviously having as many players as they can keep there and building a winning sort of culture.
Funny thing is, they'll probably fuck up and pick up Blitz arse or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, you might be so lucky.
Yeah.
We've got a few trash we could offload to them.
Done that. He didn't play this week.
the real turning point in this game was Hodge being the laid out. Not because he would have made a difference, but I meant Billy Hartung came in.
Yeah.
The poor lad. I mean, he's playing for his career every week, which means he's trying to do too much with the ball.
Yeah.
I've never seen somebody butcher the ball so much. Mm.
Speaking of big outs, though, Ty Vickery shows that he's not the cursed one.
Yeah.
He wasn't in this game and Hawthorn still lost. So he can just put his hand up and say, look, it's not my fucking fault.
Wasn't always me.
Yeah. Getting huge receptions in the VFL too, apparently, down Box Hill. Kind of a bit of a fan favourite.
Well, you should get used to it too, I reckon. Because Timmy O'Brien played all right. He kicked a couple of nice goals.
He played very well. Yeah. He had a very good fourth quarter.
Yeah.
It was the third quarter.
I think it was the fourth.
Kicked 2 in a row, and then Gunston had 4 or something.
Yeah. He had a big final quarter, Gunston, which is the only reason Hawthorn got close. See, it was funny because I just thought, you know what? The hunger was there. They were dead and buried. They're down by 40, and they got within 10 points. And you know what? All right, they've done all right.
And it was
that's the bar for Hawthorn from here.
It's one of those two patches of plays that really put them out of contention as well. The rest of it was like a full quarter effort.
Well, like I said, one brain fade from Caden Brand,
and
the game's still on. Yeah. But that's the way it goes.
But the thing is, too, the Suns did kick 13-17. So 30 scoring shots to 19. Yeah. If the Suns kick straighter, then they've blown them out of the water and they're never in it. But then again, if Hodge had been around there, maybe they would have been able to sucker up a couple of more goals. So. You know, if only.
Yeah, and if Lee Matthews was still playing, we would have won easy.
He's probably considered it.
On to the next one, which was the upset that I think we all picked. So I don't know if that counts as an upset then.
I'm stoked that we actually picked this because I'm pretty sure all three of us were on Brisbane.
Sweet, I'll jump on board.
We were, because I had people messaging me saying, yeah, good call on that one. I'm like, yeah, no worries. I did pick it, didn't I? Yep. But
I didn't pick the margin. That was already
No. it was a massive early effort. I think I was listening to this one on the radio on the way back from the Hawks game, and Zorko had something like 12 touches in the first quarter and a couple of goals.
Yeah, damn.
I mean, he's a quality player.
It's almost disappointing the way he ended up.
Was it 30 and...
30 and three goals.
And two goals.
Two goals. Sorry, my eyesight's not very good. Because he was on track for a much, much bigger game, obviously.
Yeah, and he's been obviously a player who's shown that ability pretty much his whole career. Always had a big name on himself when he was coming in, and so it's good for them to be able to actually get a huge win. And also in the wake of re-signing Shacky, which I think was a huge victory for them.
I did not see that coming.
No, and as a Tigers person who was in the hunt for getting him, I was like, we can't get like a decent player. But still, I actually prefer that he stay at Brisbane to build up that squad.
Yep.
And I think that's like that one domino needs to fall in order for them to really turn around what has been sort of rats leaving a sinking ship.
Yeah, you need to become they're not a destination club, but they need to be a neutral club where at least people consider them rather than just going, nah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, especially a guy 19. But what I liked about it was, they said he's going to spend some time away from the club. They never said that he was looking at leaving. Like, there were rumours always, as there are. But to me, it just seemed like the way that Brisbane were handling it was, it's not that he wants to leave. he needs to actually go and sort something out.
Yeah.
And he came back and re-signed within a week.
Yeah.
So I think that Brisbane are actually on a good wicket there. That's a good point, actually.
Yeah, it might be under wraps there or something. It actually makes a lot of sense. I didn't consider it that way.
Might be more fan... Just something
player,
else.
Yeah.
And they're focused.
And they haven't brought it out into public because, one, it's not their business, and two, they don't need to.
And two, he's 19. So shit, you think's important at 19? Yeah. Generally doesn't matter too much.
Stephen Martin, too. He didn't get the hit-out win, but, geez, he was handy around the ground.
Yeah.
He managed to get 22 possessions, which, for a ruckman, is brilliant. Throw in 7 marks and 4 tackles, and his tackles are full-on tackles.
Yeah, of course they are.
He was fantastic.
Well, I mean, that's why I picked the upset. Well, you know, when you say it's an upset. I guess when the 18th-ranked team wins, it is an upset.
Yeah.
But it was going to be off the back of him because Sanderlands wasn't going to play.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think Fife's still not right. He did not look like the player we know he is.
He did take a couple of heavy knocks, and I don't know if they were pre-existing that then aggravated it. So,
yeah.
Yeah, not running at 100%.
What did you end up getting? Also, Semi Mays, I thought, did a pretty stand-up job as well. Put in a four-quarter effort. One of those people who sometimes when he puts in too much effort, it doesn't really help his team. Yeah. But this is one where I felt he had like enough control in what he was doing and played a lot smarter than what we used to see him play.
And obviously, Louis Taylor kicking 4.
Yeah.
It's a good return. But, I mean, they were running on top of the ground. This is the one that, you know, they needed to put away because Freo were right for the picking.
Yeah. And when's Lachie Neal's contract up? That's got to be.
I'm not sure.
He's coming pretty soon.
Can we ask North Melbourne?
Yeah, I reckon.
Not offering him a mil. He's about 800 grand.
Slowly becoming the meme king too.
All right, on to the other Saturday night game, which was Essendon and Port Adelaide. Again, I think I predicted Essendon for this one, but not the way they played. That was unbelievable. The best Essendon have played in a long, long time.
Yeah, this is one I dropped. I thought every time I think Port are making a run for, you know, the top four, they fall over like this. And they didn't pressure the ball carrier. Essendon fucking did. They were everywhere gang tackling, and then not just gang tackling, but waiting for the ball to come out and tackling that bloke as well.
Yeah.
I love the tipper watch on the Channel 7 broadcast. And the way he was playing was just amazing.
How is there not a movie already about that bloke? Like,
I'm sure it's on its way.
It's an absolute Hollywood script. It sells itself. And, you know, the bloke went from being, you know, not quite good enough to now is now an out star.
Well, I mean, he wouldn't be on an AFL list if it weren't for, you know, the saga and the breaks that they got last year.
Oh, right now, every team would have him.
Absolutely.
You'd make room. And almost pulled down an absolute screamer, too.
Yeah.
Just bobbled it and dropped it, but he's up there.
Even if he held on to it, wouldn't be Mark of the Week.
No,
not even Mark of the Week.
No. I'd be Mark of the Weekend.
Yeah, that's about it. And, of course, big Cal Hooker kicking 5 first-half goals when a lot of media were saying he shouldn't be up forward.
Yep.
Not a bad return.
Yeah, it's not a way to stick it up a media who have not been too nice to you historically, so you got to love that one.
Even the way he was kicking him, like, you go, nah, it's your night.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, for the first quarter, you know, all right, sweet. At least we got that problem solved.
And big Joey Danaher was the same. I mean, when he was kicking ones with his head's looking at his bootlaces and he's just throwing it out, kicked it around 2 people. No idea what the goals were, but it's gone straight through.
He's the one you identified last week when we were talking about the game, is that someone's going to have to man up on him, and how's the matchup going to go?
Is the answer.
Turned out, it didn't go well, but neither did any of the matchups. So it was almost a free running game. Almost Port Adelaide got done by a Port Adelaide strategy.
Danaher's really emerged as well in the last probably month. He's gone from a bloke that you think, oh, the ball's in his hand, he might get it, might not, to just like, no, he's better than average chance. And it's he's worth the price of admission at the moment.
Yeah, also, like, I'm not sure what Port Adelaide are doing with Robbie Gray. He's kicking goals, but if they're not winning, I think he might be more utilised around the ground. Like, find some rest for him.
It's really strange, because I heard in the post-match press conference with Ken Hinckley, they asked him about, is Robbie Gray 100%? You know, is he right? And he goes, I'm getting sick of this question. And then said he's nearly right. I'm like, well, I don't understand why you're going to say that question if he's obviously not 100% because you just said it.
Yeah.
I still reckon it's a mistake. Even though he's kicked, you know, 2 or 3 goals most games up forward, I'd still say I'd rather have him, you know, miss 4 weeks and be right than to play 8 weeks and be okay.
Yeah, because at this point you need him to be in the midfield getting first use of the ball or be responsible for whoever is getting the ball winner for the other team.
He's too good to gamble with.
Yeah. Yeah. You put him at better than average odds of playing finals, so you need him right to play finals.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I reckon these are one of the sides that might just drop out.
Well, I think they can, but I'd still put them at better than 50%. I think probably about a 70% chance.
Yeah, and obviously with Gray going forward means Wingard spending more time in the middle, and I don't think that suits him as much.
No, yeah.
I know that they've wanted to turn him into a midfielder, but he's better off having his two or three goals a game up
See,
forward.
I think he's a run-through midfielder. Like, you put a wingman or put him on the back flank or something and push him through the middle, but as an out-and-out midfielder, I feel like he's better off making your being like a backstop or having them responsible for him away from the ball, because he can tear a game open. And so if you can pull one of their good players off of the ball and make them responsible for him when he's playing a kick behind or something like that, I feel like that's where he does his best work. Give him a bit of space and he's amazing.
And Dixon gone from the penthouse to the shithouse within a week. Well, he had a shocker.
Because he actually had a backman on him this week.
Yeah.
he was always going to rip Gibson apart. But you put Hurley on him, who, you know, a lot of people put in their mid-year All-Australian side.
He's going to find it harder. He's a bloody good player, Hurley.
I thought he had a great game too. I thought he did really well down the back.
Yeah, he managed to rebound very, very well.
Yeah.
He's had 25 touches, which is not a bad effort.
And looking at how dominant they were, you know, he's playing centre-half back or full-back, and running through the lines there and setting up Wallow, who can run through as well and finish it off.
Only one tackle for him, which just shows how much of the ball he was actually able to distribute rather than getting to it second.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, like I said, it's one of the best games Essendon played in a long, long time. And even guys like Fantasia, who didn't kick a goal, which is unusual for him, I thought his run through the middle, that's just adding another string to his bow.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, this is almost a poor out of strategy that they've implemented. And it seems like the Essendon team has really come into their own now, more confident. They're not trying to just sort of have a make-do strategy. They know what parts they've got and slowly working towards having a game plan that's their own.
Yeah. Yeah, even Job Watson looked like he was enjoying himself, which hasn't been the case this season. he's been just dragged out there and thrown in the ball. But he had a bit of fun, got 30 touches, and maybe he's the barometer of the club. Maybe he's the one who sets the, I guess, the feel around it.
And
I don't know.
And like Goddard, it doesn't look like he's a big fan of fun.
Well, I did see Dyson Heppel posted on Twitter saying he brought an extra set of pretzels. Just in case Goddard loses his shit for the game.
Oh, it's good to see a Goddard dummy spit.
I don't mind that, though. I would rather have a bloke pissed off about getting done than blokes who go, oh, well, it's not a year anyway.
Fine. Yeah, they generally get more respect than Goddard, though. They used to be him being pissed off, like, oh, shut up, cunt.
Yeah, well, we've heard this one before. All right, we talk about upsets. No, none of us picked this one, though. Carlton by a point over the Giants.
No.
Now, is just Carlton winning by a point, or it's GWS losing by a point, isn't it?
Bit of both. I mean, I think GWS were up by a point with about 2 minutes to go, I think it was.
Yep.
And then Carlton managed to surge forward. I think Casbolt had a chance to put one through the middle, ended up spraying it, which is unlike him for this season. He's had a very good set shot regime. I think we flagged that before the season started, that having Savrocka down there would help him out. I think I did, so good on me. Managed to spray it, managed to get another rush through, I think it was, and then the other direction, for some reason, they decided to fart around in the goal square rather than either have a shot or rush it through for a draw.
Well, it was right at the death. Stevie J decided a handball from 15 metres out. I don't think he's done that before in his career.
No.
I think he's sick.
Yeah, he must be. Something's going on there. But all the focus on the loss for GWS is on Toby Green. He kicked 4 points in the final quarter.
Yeah.
Geez. You know, okay, he's had a great year. He's had all Australian level year, but it cost the team.
And like the accusations were a bit of arrogance, like trying to win it off your own boot when really, you know, you've got some good players around you that you can share that load on.
That's what he's paid for, though.
Yeah, true. I'm not saying I agree with those sentiments, but people need a scapegoat for their loss, and Toby Green is always one that was going to be an easy scapegoat, no matter what he does.
Well, because even his own teammates don't really like him. You know,
they couldn't.
He's your prick.
You look at Geelong, you look at Dangerfield and Selwood in the middle, you go, Jesus Christ, that's not a bad duo. Dylan Scheel and, I've just gone blank, Tom Scully.
Yeah.
I tell you what, in 2 or 3 years' time, they're going to be the same.
Yeah.
The same mould, they just run so hard all day.
Yeah, I feel there's a lot of Daniel Kerr about Daniel Scheel, injuries and all.
Yeah.
Like, got the strapping, but the same sort of hard-nosed.
Maybe 2 inches taller.
Yeah, yeah.
And Cruiser, Mumford just could not keep up with him. No. I think they split the hitouts, but Cruiser was everywhere.
Yeah, he took some big grabs too, Big Matty. He's done that a few times this year.
Yeah.
He had 8 tackles as well and managed to sneak through for a goal. And very, very dominant display from the lad. I think it was his 100th, they said?
150.
150. So he's still a younger lad.
Yeah. He's always been awesome at knowing what his limitations are and playing within those limits.
But very, very mobile. Great to watch him play. Especially against Mumford, who's one of the most intense physical ruckmen going around, if not the.
I think Mumford might have been brought back to the pack a little bit, not in the physicality, but just in the overall stakes.
Yeah, I think his gas tanks dropped off.
Yeah, I think so. He's been taken to task a few times this year.
But I think that's what opposition ruckmen are doing now too. They're trying to make him run his legs off.
Yeah,
because he's not the most mobile lad, because he's probably tipping the scales about 125 kegs.
Yeah.
And look, if you're going to be that ball of muscle that he is, you've got to try and run him around.
And I feel like that his skill has always been, obviously, that big, brawn person that can win the ball out of the ruck.
The enforcer.
But sort of the strategy these days are giving up the ruck in return for having an extra midfielder there and sharking it and then making them be a candle around the ground for another man. So I feel like sort of the game strategy is taken away from someone like Mumford as opposed to him sort of dropping off. I feel like they've just been able to out-strategise that advantage that teams traditionally have with a ruckman like Mumford.
And Brendan Bolden's looking like a bit of a genius after this game because he moved Liam Jones. One, he named Liam Jones, which questions his sanity there. But moved him down back, he turns out to be more than handy.
Yeah,
he did.
You can change a man's career, that can.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, speaking of cloak.
Doherty as well.
Yeah, All-Australian Doherty as well.
Yeah.
He had 35 touches. Looking brilliant. 12 marks as well. Anytime you can get more than 10 marks, you're doing something good. You're running to the right areas of space.
That's what Carlton were doing, was putting a loose man behind the ball because, they knew if, generally speaking, the GWS midfield is younger and faster than theirs, they're going to get the run on. That wall they built, it sacrifices it up the ground, but it was working for them.
It was an NFL-style offense, I found.
A little bit.
They'd have someone behind the line of scrimmage, running around like a wide receiver, turning the button hook, and the ball's there.
They did exceptionally well in that game plan. And it took GWS far too long to try and figure it out, and obviously they weren't accurate enough to take full advantage when they did get by it.
Yeah.
We've been saying this all season, that certain teams at their best will beat pretty much any team at their worst.
Yeah.
And I think for this level...
that's dangerously close to what happened.
This is Carlton's best, and GWS is pretty much close to their worst.
Pretty close to it.
We played this game 99 times out of 100. I think GWS win at least 90 of them. But full credit to Carlton on their day. They were hungrier, and in the dying seconds, they played better.
Just want to go back over that.
To that stat?
Yeah. I like that one. 99 times out of 100, they win 90 of them.
Yeah,
fair enough. Yep. No, we all knew what you meant.
From a scale of 1 to 15, with 9 being the highest, 6 being the lowest, I'll give him a 12.
Yep. Yeah, great stat, BT.
Does that make you lingy?
Shit. All right, on to the final one, the Queen's Birthday, Melbourne, Collingwood. Great game.
Hang on, I figured out. 9 draws.
Draws.
That's what I meant.
Go for it. Great game. The intensity there, and it was still up for grabs in the final 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Absolutely great to watch.
The only thing that could have made this better was if Collingwood had lost to a free kick.
Yeah, I would have argued with that.
Well, yeah, free kick did have some influence in it, but I feel like Collingwood still got the best of them throughout the whole match.
I thought so too. They got the rub of the green.
Yeah, they weren't decisive, but if you're going to have to put the needle in one direction or the other, I feel like Collingwood got the best of them.
That's the way it happens. Now, Jeremy Howes, Mark, is it all over?
I can't think, unless someone does a backflip, I can't think how you can have it better. He had delight of height. He had just, on top of McDonald, who's a big lad, and managed just reach over him and keep going up. So, look, if there's a better mark out there, I'm willing to see it, but Jesus can take, take some beating.
It's going to take something.
It's going to take Jeremy Howe doing a better mark, I think,
probably. I thought when it counted, Petraka stood up as well. Some of his marking up forward was the difference because you saw Darcy Moore drop a lot.
Yeah.
But Petraka, no worries.
I feel like his kicking, it wasn't the most accurate. A lot of times he was spraying right, and then when he overcorrected left and only just snuck it through for a very important goal.
There was that funny one, wasn't it, where he actually thought he missed and he snuck it. He goes, oh, yes.
It looked like it missed too, like hitting the post.
He's impressed with that. Champion. Look, Jesus Christ, they got to lock him into a 10-year contract or something.
Yeah. It was a frustrating game at times with some simple turnovers and just lots of not clean grabs of the ball.
Well, there was one stage there where it was 10 minutes of the scrappiest footy you can imagine, but it was still good to watch because it was intense.
Yeah. It's pretty cold.
Unless you went on these sort of, I don't know if you call it a marquee game, but they're the special day games.
Birthday. Yeah, they get it every year.
It's Melbourne's biggest game of the year.
Yeah, you want the average viewer to be invested in it just from a close, hard-fought match. Doesn't have to be the most skillful, but as long as it's close and people give it 100% effort, I don't think you can deny that both teams really let it all out in the field.
Actually, that puts Buckley 0-2 for marquee games, doesn't it? Lost the Anzac Day game.
Yeah, I guess. Yep.
Lost this one.
If you like to. This was, they won 3 on a trot before this one. So I still think Collingwood are looking like they're in the right direction.
Yeah, they've got the right team.
I think they did all right. They had injuries coming into this game as well, like three or four that dropped out from last week. Mm. I thought Fasolo did well. Took some great grabs.
Yeah.
Especially Fasolo. That last one when we kicked the goal after the siren.
Yeah. Grundy Petrarca got best on ground, but I think Grundy was put his best hand up for as well.
Yeah.
It was
unbelievable. Without a doubt.
I thought Sidebottom played a very smart game as well. He's very smart with his disposal, and especially knowing when to not take the first option, I thought was very, very intelligent, working through those packs. For a guy who, not the most naturally gifted player, he makes up for it with brains, and annoyingly so.
Yeah, you could make the argument that they've got three All-Australians in Sidebottom, Treloar and Grundy.
Yeah.
Because Grundy's All-Australian ruck at the moment.
And I think Treloar's just about All-Australian.
He's unbelievably good.
Him, Dusty and Selwood, I think, that are the shoo-ins for the midfield.
Sloan,
yeah.
But on Grundy, this is going to sound a bit funny, but there's been a few teams this year that haven't played a recognised ruckman like Melbourne did today.
Yeah.
I think he is the best ruckman against unrecognised ruckman, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
There's a few times, a couple of games we've seen this year, it might have even been Goldstein and a few of the others, that when the other person hasn't contested the ruck and then they've just tapped it down to their feet.
Yeah.
Mm. Grundy's noticed it, like when Watts and somebody else wouldn't contest the ruck.
Yep.
He just thought, well.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'll grab it then.
Yeah, definitely.
He did that a few times.
Yeah, quite a few times.
And the rules are there to sort of dissuade Ruckman from doing that, but he's obviously, Ruckman aren't the most intelligent people running around in the Guernsey.
Well, I'm say, you know, damning with faint praise, but he's the smartest Ruckman there is.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's not revolutionary.
No, it's like, not.
Oh, no, I've got a free chance at this, so I reckon I'll either take it and handball it to my player or tap it to my player. Fuck me, that's a great idea.
Yeah, and it kind of sort of takes the enticing way of hiring someone like Mason Cox and giving them another
experiment
just based on height, you know what I mean?
Wow, worth a run.
I'm going to say 7 foot, still 7 foot in at the end of the day, but I thought Brody Grundy's become too good around the ground to ignore him.
Yeah.
There's even some chase downs and tackles that he did. You go, okay, that's exactly what you want from a rover.
And he's only 22.
Is he really?
Grundy, yeah.
Oh,
he's only young.
Wow.
Jesus.
That's what I mean. He's so good. North Melbourne offering $1 million as a midfielder.
He's worth it.
Bloody oath.
Bloody do it. 22. I didn't realise he was that young.
I'm just going to double check myself. I'm pretty sure I read that earlier. Make sure I'm absolutely certain.
And people who tried hard and went backwards, Salem. One of the players we pegged at the start of the season had a stand up. And
you pegged.
I pegged, yes. Not from lack of effort, but holy shit, man. It's the harder he tried, the worse he played.
Yeah, it wasn't. Sometimes it's just not your day.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was funny when Petrarca was sort of on fire, kicked the goal, they get him off. I'm thinking, you may as well just put the red jacket on Salem, even though there's no subs, fuck it. Just make sure that no one, under no circumstances, puts him back on the field.
You're done today, Salem.
Yeah, just have a break.
He's 23, actually.
There you go. Well, still. Yeah.
Still impressive.
Only just 23.
Still impressive.
At his age, he's got
10 years
to be a superstar.
Also, I thought Jaden Hunt's second efforts were very good. His first efforts were ordinary at times, but his ability to stay in the game and not sort of lose his focus was very important in that fourth quarter.
I want to shout out to a great game to Aish. I really enjoyed yelling at him and saying how much he sucked.
Don't know why you got it in for him, though. Just decided to pick him.
Well, pretty much because when he was a free agent, he pretty much brushed off North and said, no, I'm not going there.
Well, I mean, if you're a free agent and North don't offer you $1 million, you must feel like shit.
Yep.
Well, at the moment, yeah. But also, I just don't like his face. I really can't be more specific than that. I don't know
why. You can't see it with that helmet on.
I just don't like the bloke. So it's funny because I like him less than Greenwood, who left for money. and I'm sticking with that. I'm just running with that. I don't like Aisha's face.
I thought Lyndon Dunn down back had a good game. He looked dead at one period, literally, and then he got up and jogged off. And I thought, that wore off, didn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway. That's the way it goes. Pendlebury only had 22 touches, and I think he got five of those in the last 5 minutes as well. So he was kept quiet for a lot of the day.
Yeah.
And as the playmaker for them, I think that helped Demons a lot. I think they did a good job.
Was that Bernie Vince on him, or was Vince on Treloar?
I'm not sure, and I think he might have spent time on both of them, though.
Yeah.
It seemed like I remember seeing both of them with him running down at them.
Yeah.
Sure, he would have.
This is all in spite of Jordan Lewis having a pretty shocking game, too.
A very, very quiet
terrible
game.
One.
Yeah, almost liability down back when you've got Darcy Moore taking overhead marks. And
I don't know about liability, but he's certainly a stepladder.
You've got Melksham and Lewis trying to contest the high ball. It's not. Yeah, it doesn't bode well.
It was also a big day of redemption for Jack Watts, who kicked the sealer for him, running down the wing, which is great to see. Because obviously, you know, the story's been told many times, but when he debuted on Queen's birthday and got smashed into the grass.
Yeah.
Well, he came back today and played
well. He's
having
a good season.
He is.
Well, he's not scared anymore. You can see it in the way he plays.
Yeah. Well, I think when they started playing him in the ruck, when they lost Spencer and Gorn, they're like, mate, you don't expect you to set the world on fire. This is a no-lose thing. Just do what you can.
He actually looks like a man now.
Yeah. Well, it's the first time in his career he's had no expectations.
Yeah.
And he's lived up to them.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. He wasn't a brilliant ruckman, but he was good enough. And now that he's got that sort of, I guess, string to his bow, he takes the boundary line throw-ins every once in a while.
Yeah.
Doesn't do too bad a job. And he's willing to, you know, get shoulder to shoulder, push back when someone's pushing on him. Good on him.
All right, so that wrapped up round 12.
Round, must say.
It was, it was enjoyable. It got off to a slow start, but it got there eventually.
The thing is, I thought generally the standard footy was pretty shit, but the games were actually enjoyable to watch.
Yeah,
it got there. Very levelled.
Even the blowout that was Saturday night, Essendon Port, Essendon played so well, it was great to watch.
It was very enjoyable,
It's just a shame that Essendon supporters got to enjoy it.
Yeah.
all right, on to round 13 then. On Thursday night again, we got West Coast hosting Geelong. This is a big game for West Coast because they need a scalp.
It's hard
to pick them.
Yeah. I've been cold on Geelong for a while, but they keep winning. And I've been cold on West Coast and they keep losing.
That tells nothing.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm going Geelong here. I think they've just got too many big men.
It's hard to argue against Geelong, the way they're playing at the minute.
Yeah, and like we've said about West Coast, they've got the people who are putting in consistent efforts, and then there's a huge drop-off to the next level of players. And I think Geelong have got a much more well-rounded team, much more strategies for if the best West Coast team does show up.
Well, I think that's a real indictment against West Coast too, saying that, because Geelong have been known to... the big criticism against them was they rely too much on Dangerfield and Selwood.
Yep.
And you're saying they're more well-rounded than West Coast. Well, says a lot.
I feel like, exactly. I feel like Mitch Duncan and players of that calibre have filled in the gaps.
Absolutely. And Tui's been brilliant.
Is Kennedy right?
No.
Yeah, so I think they're fucked.
Yep.
line through them. They're done for the season. Cats win.
I'm on the Cats as well. North playing the Saints at Etihad Stadium.
I like this game. I really like this game.
Either team could win by 10 goals and still it'd be a game you'd either love or hate. You could see some brilliant football, you could see utter shit football. I don't know.
I think it'll be mediocre football, but very hard fought. And both teams, I think, will have a big fan turnout for what they usually get.
Well, it should do.
Because I think this is a yardstick they're up against at the moment. We're fighting for the same positions. And so we need to be ahead of these guys in order to push forward. So I think this will be one that both consider very winnable and always must win.
I think if Riewoldt is not playing, then Saints have no chance. Yep. Even saying that, I think North might win this one. I think they've got too many tall options.
I think what's going to make the difference is if they do play Goldstein, and they probably will, that is going to hurt them because he is not right. His ankle's still fucked. And
it could be, too, that age has got him.
Yeah,
could be. He could just be struggling. But, I really hope they rest him up and play Proust because that kick could be anything.
Coming off the bye, though, I mean...
Yeah, take an extra week, lad. Just rest up, mate.
Could do.
They've got to, I think. Because especially he can also help out down back as a loose man when Tarrant's got two on one. Saints got a pretty decent forward line. There's some people you have to give respect to.
Well, this is the problem too, because Thompson has been a fucking liability. He's given. If they put him on Bruce, it's going
to
be rough.
Well, you're almost thinking of Cunnington to go back there and just smash some people up, just make them intimidated to drop into the gaps.
See, I think you got to put Tarrant on Bruce, which means that McCartan for Thompson, in which case McCartan's really got to stand up, because if he can't beat Thompson, then he's not AFL standard.
Well, then they've got Marley Williams and maybe even Luke McDonald running around there. It's going to be one of the ones where, again, North at their best and Saints at their worst, 10-goal blowout. If Saints at the best, North at the worst, 10-goal blowout.
And look, I think it's going to be a battle of the forward line. So I think there's going to be a whole lot of defense going on in this game. So I
feel like that'd be good to watch.
If you're kicking straight and you're hitting targets, that's going to be the winning strategy.
I think Jared Wade will be the measuring stick. If he has a day, North win by a lot. If he doesn't, anything could fucking happen.
Saturday, the MCG, Richmond versus the Swans, 4th versus 14th. What a game.
Season-defining.
It's going to be a cracker. It's two teams that match up very well against each other on paper.
Rance v. Buddy.
Yeah.
You pay to watch that.
And it determines whether, Richmond are overachieving or Swans are underachieving.
We're overachieving.
We already know that's the case. That is 100% the case.
If Richmond win this, then you can make the argument they deserve to make finals.
If Richmond win this, you make the case that God wants them to win this year. Like, the other teams are falling down around them.
It could be the Leicester City story for the Tigers.
That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that, maybe it's really the Satan, because everyone's going to hate that in the AFL. You don't want Richmond to be too good.
I'll tell you what. Yeah, okay, we won't worry about that.
I don't think they've got anyone that can stop Buddy, stop Dusty, but Cochin's going to be the defining player in this to me.
He's having a great year, Cochin. He's probably having one of the best years of his career. Yep. He's going to be runner-up best and fairest. Port Adelaide are hosting Brisbane. Port coming off a very disappointing game and Brisbane coming off a real high. I expect those to be reversed in this one.
Yeah.
Port at home.
Expect Port to be high. Adelaide Oval.
Yeah, I think Port will be... you'd think they'd be too classy to win, but I'd love to see Brisbane go down there and smash them.
Oh, it'd be fantastic.
Just don't think it's going to happen.
I'd love to see Koshy watch on the broadcast for that as well.
I'd love to see Koshy mildly tortured. just a couple of 5 minutes of waterboarding.
I think Brisbane have played their grand final. I'm on it. Port.
Yeah, easy. Suns are hosting Carlton.
This one's a tricky one for me, being up in Metricon.
Now that Carlton have put in an effort like that as well.
So if Gold Coast have hit some straps, I think. So it's going to be a battle of, Ablett versus the rest of Carlton's midfield, pretty much.
I think they might have turned Kerno and say, mate, we know you're winning the ball now, but we need you to do a job for us.
If you're shutting down, you've got Doherty, Murphy and Gibbs to be able to pick up that slack, then that's a winning strategy.
I think Cruiser as well. He could have another day out.
I'm
reluctantly on Carlton, but this is one of those ones where the best versus the worst could equal a blowout in either way.
I think Tom Lynch is just too big. And he was a little bit quiet against Hawks. I know he kicked a couple of goals, but he should have kicked more.
Yep.
So I think Carlton haven't got a match up for him. And I think he might run riot on this one.
I'm going Gold Coast just on a very, very close match. I think they might just squeak through persistency.
And on Sunday, the only game on Sunday again, Bulldogs versus Melbourne at Etihad.
I love this game.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
isn't
it? It's going to be amazing.
The loser probably drops out of the eight, depending on other results. If this was at the MCG, I might have changed my tips, but Bulldogs can't play that bad 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, yep. And, for Melbourne to win, their players like Salem and Lewis can't play that bad 2 weeks in a row.
Or Maxi Gorn comes back. There's a chance he's back in for this one.
Yep. I don't think a player like Maxwell makes a difference in this game. I think they need more running shutdown players as opposed to a dominant ruckman. because I feel like there's still too many options for Bulldogs around the ground that could punish Melbourne, as opposed to Melbourne not going to be able to use brute force to run through them because they don't necessarily have it all.
See, I see it the other way. I think Gorn is a player that can have such influence. You know, he's come back from injury, so he probably won't be at his best, you'd expect. But in this sort of game, this would be suitable to him so well, in that he can be running around, being an option, and just so dominant as we know he can be. So, look, if he comes back and he's good, I think they blow him out of the water.
Yeah, it's Jesus, it's a tough game to pick, but hopefully it was as close and intense as the one today.
Yeah.
To be happy enough.
Oh, it'll be a tackle fest.
If I had to pick a team, I think I'll go with the Bulldogs, but yeah, I think I'm going Bulldogs. As long as it's close.
I'm going Melbourne. I think it's just because I expect them to just pressure.
Yep.
And I expect some big changes at the selection table with the Bulldogs this week.
Yep.
All right, that'll lose in round 13. That's that. You know, we've got all your tips there. We'll pick all the upsets. Don't worry about that. We've got it sorted. That'll do us.
Let us lead the way.
Put it on the multi and retire home.
We'll see you next week.
Enjoy yourself.
Peace.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.